CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. To submit your comments, visit the website crtc.notlong.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4.
There. Happy Wednesday afternoon. I believe it's the 14th of October, is it? Can you imagine? We're almost halfway through this month already. My name is Tracy Fuller, and although I have abandoned the Arts Report soundtrack, the usual snappy, older something background track, I have decided to kick off the show today with the Shindig Night 5 winners. Yes, the Kidnap Kids rocked the Railway Club last night at Shindig No. 5 for 2009. They were up against Move On Citizens and the Receptionists. So I figured a great way to start off the show today would be to share one of their songs. So this is Bottle Rocket by Kidnap Kids. I'm going to bring it on back up for you and hit you on the other side.
When you speak, my heart takes off, it takes off like a bottle rocket. I don't wanna tell my friends, I don't wanna get advice. I'm fine sitting in the
That was the Kidnap Kids on CITR 101.9 FM, and they are the winners of Night 5 of this year's Shindig. And if you haven't checked out Shindig yet, I would really encourage you to head on down to the Railway Club on Tuesday evenings. We have amazing bands there every week, and for the past 2 weeks, it's been a real upset at the end who's won, I've heard. I haven't been able to make it out there myself, so yes, bad on me. But there have been, it's been a heated competition with a lot of different sounding bands. You can't really go wrong when you've got a xylophone, as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, there was a punk band on last night, and they put on an amazing show and then didn't end up taking home the prize at night. Or not the prize, but didn't win the night. So, I mean, you'll never know what's going to happen. Head on down to the Railway Club, and that's the end of my pitch for today. So, moving on with the Arts Report, I have got back in touch with my wonderful film critic, Zachary Rothman. He has been going to an amazing number of films at the Vancouver International Film Festival, which is closing this Friday. Yes, if you haven't yet gone out to see any of the films, fear not, there are still lots of great ones out there, ones for you to attend. A lot of Canadian features are now on this week's schedule in week two as things are wrapping up. So head on down to the Granville 7, that's the Empire Theatre, or to any of the other locations. I saw one film at The Ridge the other week, which was amazing. And there's some at the Fifth Avenue as well. So all around town, get on out and support the Vancouver International Film Festival while you still can. And on that note, here's the first half of my conversation with Zachary Rothman, my film critic, who's also a filmmaker in Vancouver. And I will have a two-part conversation with him on today's show. Here's part one. Zachary Rothman is my fantastic film critic, and he's been seeing a whack of films at this year's Vancouver International Film Festival. I've got him on the line again. Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tracy. So this week, I saw a lot of movies this week, and I saw some shorts, some foreign films, some Canadian films, all sorts of stuff. So maybe I'll start with some hometown heroes here.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Canadian short films, not all of them hometown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tracy, people
yes,
always
Zachary.
Say, if you don't have anything nice, don't say anything at all. I have a few nice things to say.
Okay.
But first, let me say that the punchline short film, can we stop making them? Can we just stop making them?
Well.
Such as Man and Beast, a few guys in a cottage find a raccoon while they're making steaks for dinner in their boy hangout time. They succeed in killing the raccoon in a brutal way, and lo and behold, lose appetites for the steaks, fade out.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah.
That one sounds complex.
It's wow. Overburden, you know, it's a great subject, a film about Aboriginal communities dealing with being in the center of the oil patch. There's pretty disturbing stuff in there, if the filmmakers could make you care. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to say too much about them. The Veiled Commodity, a really beautifully animated piece about slavery, but it feels more like a public service announcement than a story or like anything, and it, you know, and it falls really flat. The Art of Drowning, Diego McLean, BC, based on the poem by Billy Collins. It's lovely. I found a good one.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a simple meditation on life and reflecting on life and the insignificance of life and the significance of life at the same time. It's just really pretty. It's like a 2-minute film. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
10 for Grandpa, Doug Carr, Ontario. So good. Best of the
really?
Bunch.
Really?
Yeah, it's so good. It's about a possibly fictitious, although I think it's true, filmmaker is questioning Grandpa's death and if he was murdered, and then questioning all the things he did in life. It's snappy. It's surreal. It's really lovely, and, you know, it doesn't rely on that punchline that these other films did.
And all that in a short film.
It's a, you know, 3 or 4 minute film. It's great.
Well, I was going to ask, there is a number of different short series going on, all of which were Canadian. Which one did you happen to see?
Oh, well, this one was Road Work Ahead.
Aha.
In work areas, traffic may be controlled by persons with a sign or flag. You must obey these persons. It's a very... a very loosely put together group of films. They're not. They're united sometimes by some sort of automobile or journey or something, but really it's just a bunch of films kind
Fair
of crammed together. Mike Inc., which is a film that came out of the Crazy Eights Festival. It's astounding for what they did in 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautifully animated and wonderfully lit. Well acted. It's good. It's good. It's definitely worth seeing. And that's all I'm going to say about the shorts. The rest are just too bad to talk about. But let's move on to another one I wasn't crazy about this week, one I had really high hopes for, which has been billed as the first ninja movie in decades, Sai Yoichi's Kamui.
Mm-hmm.
Stinkorama.
Really? Oh,
yeah, you
so
know,
upsetting.
You know, and I come from a school of, you know, ninja movies where you expect the cheesy, humorous moments that, you know, aren't well acted, aren't well done. Instead, you get kind of a badly over-melodramatic, wishy-washy kind of film with poorly choreographed stunts, action scenes that don't make any sense, computer graphics that would make you giggle. It's it was a really disappointing film for me, you know, growing up in the Ninja 80s, and then seeing this film as you know, the first ninja movie to come along in so long, it's.
I wonder, I mean, it occurs to me that perhaps it was being based towards a different audience. I mean, would hometown audiences back in China, I assume, would they put up for this kind
of
standard?
You know, it's got that sort of sugary, sweet melodrama of a lot of Asian cinema now, but the worst of Asian cinema. And so I don't know. I'm not sure.
It also surprises me that the stunts weren't very good, because of all things, that's one of the reasons why we know and why so many ninja films are cult films is because in progression, at least, the fight scenes tend to be pretty good and enjoyable to watch, not the movie.
They just don't make any sense. I'm not saying there weren't some interesting stunts and wire work and things like that, because, you know, they did do a few things. I'm not saying it was a complete failure in every way, but you know, the choreography of an action scene in a ninja movie, you have to know who people are and where they are and what the relation is. And when you see three ninjas, and then there's nine, and then there's one, and then there's, you don't know who these people are, and it just, you know, I mean, I've seen ninja movies before. I'm expecting, you know, the least in terms of story development in an action scene. It just doesn't make any sense. So that's Kamui, but there is hope for ninja films, because James McTeague's Ninja Assassin is still playing tomorrow, and I think Friday at the All film right. festival, maker of V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe.
Are you going to check it out?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
Okay, Canadian film. I saw This Land and Finding Farley, which play back-to-back together. Mm-hmm. This Land, Diane Whelan. I like this film. Diane goes with a small group of Canadian army adventurers and rangers and Inuit up to the farthest northern land point in Canada to do what else but plant a Canadian flag. Thank you, Stephen Harper. And, you know, it's a beautiful journey where you really feel the ferocity of the elements, and, you know, to see these people with all their modern tools and conveniences and airlift be bogged down, dangerously bogged down in a storm, and have, you know, the environment still play such a deciding role in whether you live or die, was really something. And the way the film was put together, it's kind of loosely constructed. It's personal. The filmmaker, Whelan, sees herself, puts herself in the film again and again, and it's got this kind of loose, easy feel to it. And I really like that about it. But the film maybe suffers from not having a point. I don't mean to sound overly harsh on that, because, you know, just going and completing this thing, and you see her, you know, she's filming herself, the camera work, be a product of probably not being warm enough to get your hands around the camera properly. It's really sort of shaky. Never are the images as carefully framed as probably she would want. But I think that lends itself really well to the feel of the North. It's just that, you know, I felt like with everybody in the film, these interesting old Inuit rangers and everybody kind of with a story to tell, that there'd be something more from the film, but maybe I'm expecting too much.
Well, I was gonna wait until after you spoke about the Farley Mowat film, but I mean, I do think that there is still a fascination that, especially Southern Canadians, have such a fascination with the North. But I think we're getting beyond the point where you can just go to the North and that be the subject, that be the plot line, that be the driving action of a film. I was going to ask you whether or not there was any other purpose other than planting a flag, because, I mean, for those who may not know, I am obsessed with the North and would love to go back up there any time I could possibly do so, but as cinematographic as that film sounds, it doesn't sound as though there's much action or much driving plot that would keep my interest.
I think it's worth seeing. If you are a Northern buff and you just want to see, you know, really what the North is like, it's great for that. It's great. I mean, you you see it, you feel it. It's beautiful. It's horrible. And you know, and the faces of these men that take the journey, you know, are interesting and full of stories. I just wish we could have heard a little more about them. We could have understood a little bit more why they're doing what they do, and aside from, you know, for pay or because they're ordered to do it, or which brings me to Finding Farley,
right?
Directed by Leanne Allison, who also shoots the film and stars in it with her husband and son. It is about these three people, a 4-year-old boy, who decide to honor the legend Canadian writer Farley Mowat by essentially tracing the steps of many of his books by journeying by river, by canoe, up toward Hudson Bay from their home in Alberta.
Hmm.
Canmore, Alberta. Sorry about that.
No.
I really like this film. I really liked it. Put aside the grueling feeling of, you know, a million flies on your face as you approach Hudson Bay and the freezing cold water as you push your canoe up, you really get the sense of an epic journey, and it's an epic journey that's really, it's touching in a way that, you know, these people, they make contact with Farley Mowat, they begin to write letters back and forth, and it, you know, it becomes about not just connecting with work that you've enjoyed, and not just connecting with the landscape, but connecting with, you know, a very real person who's been to these places and done these things, at least some people think that he has.
Still up for debate. And
I think there's a little debate about it, but you know, just about somebody who sort of captured the essence of a landscape, and to see this landscape revisited by these three, you know, very honest, interesting, and adorable people. It's lovely. It's really a lovely journey to come along with. You really feel like you're just sort of a bit of a fly on the wall to watch these three people come to terms with you know, their own limitations in a sometimes really difficult landscape, and also get in touch with one of their heroes, you know, and they meet Farley. They come and they visit him at his house on the East Coast, and it's lovely. It's a great Canadian film. This should be
required viewing.
Should be required viewing for any Farley Mowat literature class.
Well, did they have a film crew coming along with them the whole time, or is it more of a self-made documentary?
Yeah, self-made. Leanne is forever climbing up these cliffs to get the shot of them, you know, canoeing on from their campsite,
right.
And then, you know, of course, turning around, going back, and rescaling the cliff to go get the camera.
Right.
It's to see the landscape. You really get a feeling of how impressive not just the journey is, but the fact that, you know, she was lugging this thing around day in, day out, and filming.
Were they at the screening?
Yes, Leanne was, and I didn't get a chance to speak with her, but she was lovely and honest and everything you would kind of expect from the film.
Right.
It really feels like a, you know, it's a completely honest take. It's well edited, it's well paced, and, you know, you shoot 1,000 hours and try to condense it to one. Mm-hmm. There's some challenges, and you really feel the story, and you feel connected to these people, and that's just an achievement in itself. So I really thought it was great. Finding Farley.
Finding Farley.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So, and Finding Farley plays tomorrow at 4 p.m.
At the Granville Cinema?
I think so, yeah.
Excellent.
So.
All right. Well, I'm going to fade Zach out there for a moment and just say hello again. This is Tracy Fuller, and you're listening to The Arts Report on CITR 101.9. I am definitely going to be returning to my conversation with Zach because he went and saw so many films this past week. He's really been an excellent addition and made an amazing contribution to The Arts Report during this year's Vancouver International Film Festival. But I'm going to have to break right now for a PSA, but I'm going to hit you with a little bit of music before we get to that. Chad Van Kalen is in town today. He's actually going to be playing a free show at Zulu Records at 7 o'clock tonight. And then later on, he will be performing at the Rio. And I believe tickets are sold out for that performance. But just in case there are some Chad Van Kalen fans out there, I thought I'd hit you up with a little bit of music. This is Chad Van Kalen with Burn to Ash on CITR 101.9 FM.
School look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
The Pendulum Restaurant, your source for fresh dishes made in-house. The Pendulum boasts a large selection of vegan dishes, a comfortable atmosphere, and tasty breakfasts. On sunny days, you can also enjoy the licensed patio. Conveniently located next to the pit, the Pendulum is open 7 days a week. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Welcome back to the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Tracy Fuller. And just to continue along on the VIF theme for one more minute, well, probably about six more minutes, actually, I took some tape when I went to the opening gala of the Vancouver International Film Festival this year. It was myself and my fantastic dance critic, Melanie Cooksdorf. The two of us went together. And I forgot my recorder at home last week, so I wasn't able to give you this live on-the-scene report. But I do have my recorder with me today, and listening back to it, it's fun. It's a fun little, I don't know, je ne sais quoi. So I'm going to share it with you now. This is Melanie Cooksdorf and myself at the opening screening of the Vancouver International Film Festival. Enjoy. We're standing here on Granville Street, across the street from the Empire Theaters, which has just hosted the first film at the 2009 Vancouver International Film Festival. I'm here with Melanie Cooksdorf, who usually stands in as my fantastic dance critic, but tonight she is turned into a film critic along with myself to check out this opening gala. Melanie, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tracy.
So we just saw the opening film for the 2009 festival, which was called
A Shine of Rainbows.
And, well, we have just walked out of the theater, and as much, it was an Irish-Canada production, a story of a young boy, a young orphan boy, who's taken in by a family in Cory,
yes, an island, off Ireland.
Right. On an island off Ireland. Mel, first impressions off of just walking out of the theater.
Well, I felt like... Okay. I felt like you never really felt anything in the film, and they really tried to get you to care about what was happening with the kid. And the scenes that were supposed to be scary were filled out with music and, like, scary cameras shaking, but it was never really... Like, what? Why was he afraid? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what's the journey? You know, he, like, got adopted, and the worst thing that happened was, like... At the beginning, he got adopted by a nice family. That was, like, it was pretty, you know.
Ooh.
It was, you know, the dad didn't warm up to him right away.
But, ooh. Yeah.
And then, shall I continue?
Well, I'm just going to cut in here. And one line that really struck me at the end of the film, actually, was the father was making some porridge for the young boy. And he's burned the porridge, and he's like, well, you know, it's breakfast, half burnt, but nothing a cup of sugar can't fix. And which is a lovely, cute little sentiment, but I felt like that line pertained to the whole movie. That the movie itself, the production quality, the acting, the storyline, the lack of depth of characters, a lot of it just seemed a little half-baked and some of it just overbaked or burnt.
And a little sugary.
Yeah, and that they tried to compensate for the lack thereof of any actual sustenance in the story with a lot of sugar, which didn't pan out very well as far as I was concerned.
And absolutely everybody in the movie was good. Like, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know... Nobody's that good. It's really annoying when they're that good, you know?
It's really boring when they're that good. I felt that there was really no character development in any of the characters, as much as the little boy was quaint and scared when he arrived.
The little boy, he was cute.
The little boy was definitely cute, but I think that in terms of the story, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't go anywhere we didn't see from the very first scene. And, I felt like they threw in a lot of gimmicks. Like, there was a number of characters or animals.
An animatronic seal that Tracy and I particularly enjoyed and actually had a bit of a laughing fit in the middle when he was holding this animatronic baby seal that was going, and it was supposed to be moving.
No,
I mean, profoundly moving,
yes,
in the
emotional,
emotions, not just the physical,
yes,
because it was moving. Physically.
And I'm honestly trying to be objective here in knowing that perhaps the intended audience for this film was a younger or a family-based audience. But even so, I think that families nowadays, if they're going out to see any of the Pixar films, if they're going out to see any of the...
Which are great.
Even some of the live-action films that you see in theaters nowadays, Harry Potter, amongst others... Kids are smarter, and families are smarter than this nowadays, and as much as it might be a heartfelt, touching story to read, I really didn't think that this was worthy of a film adaptation. I think there are lots of other films that could have gotten the money that probably took to film this film in Ireland, and to support taking Canadian actors, which I assume some of them were due to their accents, all the way over there to film. I felt like this is a fluff piece, and I hate to get down on Telefilm because I think they do a lot of wonderful things, but I feel like this was a prime example of some of the films that they fund that don't deserve it over top of other really genuinely artistic and different and new and avant-garde and really important films that we should be seeing a lot more and which I wish were representing Canada at an international film festival.
Well said, I think. And this film took absolutely no risks. Which Canadian cinema is like, okay, good. No risks. Everyone will like it. Let's fund it, you know? And that's it's not great. Like, the audience reaction after was lukewarm. Mm-hmm. People filed out as soon as the credits were over, with a mild amount of clapping at the end.
Yes, very polite, very Canadian response, but certainly not overwhelming. Certainly not what we saw last year after Blindness closed. I think that there's we've seen, it's just completely opposite of
it's
what we saw last year.
Quite a contrast to Blindness.
And I wonder whether they're trying to play it safe because of the economic climate, or I don't know what the festival was going for this year. But I must admit that having gone to last year's festival and this year's festival, I'm quite disappointed by this start. I really hope things build and get better throughout the festival, and that this is not a representation of how the rest of the gala films and the rest of the films that are here representing Canada will fare.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a real premiere. I'm surprised they picked this film.
All right, well, that being said, there are 15 days ahead of us of more films, all at different venues across Vancouver. I would encourage everyone to get out and definitely to go and see the films that CITR is sponsoring, which include Discorama and Taqua Core. You can find listings for those on the VIFF website, which I believe is viff.ca. And thanks again to Melanie for coming out to the gala with me.
I look forward to the gala party afterwards and see what the buzz about the movie is.
All right. This is Tracy Fuller and Melanie Hoekstorff.
Good night.
Going back in time. It was almost 2 weeks ago now that Melanie and I attended that festival premiere. And the VIFF website is viff.org, in fact. Yes. The two films that CITR was sponsoring have unfortunately passed, although they were well-attended and excellent films, as far as I'm concerned. And another mistake that I have made recently is that Chad Van Galen's in town tomorrow night. That's not tonight. Tomorrow night at Zulu Records, 7 o'clock, and then at the Rio later on Thursday evening. That's the 15th of October, I believe, unless I'm getting the date wrong as well. Oh, who knows? All right, let's hit up with some more music. On Friday, the Analog Bell Service is going to be playing at Pub 340. Analog Bell Service is from right here in Vancouver, and they're friends with other CITR-friendly bands like, you know, Hey Ocean and Said the Whale, Sunset Rubdown, Wolf Parade, so on and so forth. So in light of their upcoming concert this Friday at Pub 340, here's the Analog Bell Service with Not Dead Yet on CITR 101.9 FM.
Dead yet, and I'm not sick or tired. I'm just getting started.
This boy and girl coming home from school look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
The Pendulum Restaurant, your source for fresh dishes made in-house. The Pendulum boasts a large selection of vegan dishes, a comfortable atmosphere, and tasty breakfasts. On sunny days, you can also enjoy the licensed patio. Conveniently located next to the pit, the Pendulum is open 7 days a week. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. Hey, as far as I'm so bad, my time's a bird.
CineWorks Independent Filmmakers Society presents a series of cinematic salons with Vancouver International Film Festival artists between October 4th and 15th.
In its 15th year, Meet the Filmmakers is about the realization of ideas and the revelation of process.
These informal and insightful panel discussions with filmmakers attending the festival provide an opportunity for the festival audience to engage in meaningful dialogue with the visionaries of modern cinema.
Meet the Filmmakers is brought to you by CineWorks, the documentary organization of Canada BC Chapter, and the Praxis Center for Screenwriters and Women in Film and Television.
Salons are free. Just bring your love of film and prepare to be inspired. Visit cineworks.ca for up-to-the-minute information.
Welcome back to the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Tracy Fuller, and I'm going to take you back to my conversation with my fantastic film critic, Zachary Rothman. We were just talking about the second week of the Vancouver International Film Festival. Yes, things are coming to a close very soon. This Friday is the last day films are screening. But before that happens, Zach went to see a whole bunch of films this week, and here he is.
Directed by Sam Moaz. It's not a perfect film. It involves...
Hold on, I'm gonna take it back
a bit. Okay, well, we're not done.
Oh, we're not done. Yeah, this is it.
Let's go to Israel for Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is directed by Sam Moaz. It's not a perfect film. It involves... the war in Lebanon in the 1980s in Lebanon between Israel involving Christian militia. It's a dirty war. It's a war that, you know, you're getting a lot of films made about now, I guess, because of the distance between then and now in terms of time. It seems like a lot of Israeli filmmakers are starting to question this war now in the way that they should. But this movie takes place from the perspective of a tank crew. An Israeli tank crew, three or four, you know, young men who get sent off to battle. They're not ready for it. They don't want it, and yet they're thrust into it like everybody else. And the whole film takes place through inside the tank and through the perspective of, you know, the turret camera as they, you know, wind their way through Lebanon. And it's the best thing about this film is just the beauty of the metaphor of these young men in a tank, which is sort of the symbol of power, you know, in any sort of military conflict, but yet it's their cage, and it's the most vulnerable place on the battlefield, really. You feel their fear and their confusion and their lack of knowledge about what's happening outside, and that's really something. It's really an achievement in terms of a war film of creating that. And then, you know, if I was to criticize the film, it's that the characters in the tank they become sort of indiscernible from each other. They're not established enough to the point where, you know, it's dark in the tent, they're all swarthy young men, and I didn't know who was who at some points in the film. And I think that really hurt it. I think, you know, character development needs the establishment of character, and I felt like the film... could have done a better job of that. But that being said...
Well, I mean, having not seen the film myself, I wonder for a moment whether or not the lack of character development in that respect might be to prove that these boys are every man, are all the people involved.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, I don't know. But, but you know, and I don't want that to take it away. You know, it's finely performed. It's well shot, and it's worth seeing. And I think it really adds to dialogue of about a conflict that's still is extremely controversial and has left a lot of hurt in its wake. Yeah. So I think it's an important movie to see.
And that's called Lebanon.
And finally, Carl Bisai's Cole, British Columbia local boy, directed, starring Richard De Klerk, Candice McClure, Sonia Bennett, Chad Willett. A finely directed, finely executed, finely acted, well shot piece of melodrama. You know, it's really well done. It's kind of like going out and seeing the band Harlequin. They play their songs so well, but the songs just aren't very good. It's kind of a paint-by-numbers melodrama. It's about a guy in a small town. He wants to be a writer, so he wants to come to Vancouver and go to school, and he has burdens back home. He's got a mom who's sort of been injured, and she's right out of Falling Angels with Scott Smith,
right?
Maybe directly out of Falling Angels. Everybody plays their part exactly how they should.
Mm-hmm.
They do it well. The movie ends exactly how you think it's going to end. And it's just, it doesn't do anything. It's sort of paint by numbers. It's well done, but, it is what it is, as they say. I've been saying to people, this is a movie that's, it's predictable. It's a movie you've seen before, and it's probably going to do very well in terms of local cinema. And in a way, that's disappointing, I think. And I'm a filmmaker as much as a movie watcher, and I want filmmakers to strive for something more than what's been done. And this is a film that's not guilty of that in any way. It's a genre piece, and it faithfully executes all the generic conventions of that genre.
That completely reminds me of my own interpretation with Melanie Cooksdorf, the dance critic, on the opening film at VIFF this year. Was an entirely bland, paint by numbers, unsurprising, really sappy piece of Canadian filmmaking that I was just really disappointed in. And there was, the director was there, and many people from the festival itself were there talking about the achievement of this film or the how much they liked the film, etc. And at the end of it, I was just so disappointed that we couldn't bring anything better to the floor, especially to represent Canada at the Vancouver International Film Festival. Last year's Blindness had people talking, it had people around the world talking, and this year I almost would have walked out of the theater had I not felt a little bit too Canadian and too polite to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You
want filmmakers to take a risk. And look, Carl Bisai has done some good work before. I think he's a talented director. The script was paint by numbers. He faithfully executed that script.
Perhaps after the film festival is over, you should come in and we'll have a chat about why Canada isn't making more avant-garde films or more engaging and difficult films, whether it's an audience perspective thing or a producing problem, or because from my perspective, I think there are many filmmakers out there who may want to be making those films. Is it so? Why aren't they getting to screen?
Yeah, I think that's a whole discussion.
All right, well, we'll leave that for another time. And Zach, thank you so much again for heading out there and being our eyes on the festival this year.
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. And there are a couple days left of the festival, so if you haven't seen movies, get off your butt and get back on your butt in a movie seat and go see some movies.
Yes, definitely.
CineWorks Cineworks Independent Filmmaker Society presents a series of cinematic salons with Vancouver International Film Festival artists between October 4th and 15th.
In its 15th year, Meet the Filmmakers is about the realization of ideas and the revelation of process.
These informal and insightful panel discussions with filmmakers attending the festival provide an opportunity for the festival audience to engage in meaningful dialogue with the visionaries of modern cinema.
Meet the Filmmakers is brought to you by Cineworks, the documentary organization of Canada BC Chapter and the Praxis Center for Screenwriters and Women in Film and Television.
Salons are free. Just bring your love of film and prepare to be inspired. Visit cineworks.ca for up-to-the-minute information.
Hey, welcome back to the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. I must admit that I was expecting a report on the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra coming in from one of my contributors, but unfortunately she's having technical difficulties, and thus I won't be able to get that to you this week, and I'll have to get it to you next week. But instead, I'm going to play another track, this one from Quadruple Dare. And Quadruple Dare brings together four Vancouver bands, Adjective, Fake Shark, Real Zombie, The Good News, and Junior Major. And they're getting together actually this weekend on October 17th at the Rickshaw to get together and celebrate the release of their limited edition 12-inch vinyl album, Quadruple Dare, Vancouver Mutilation. And all the bands are going to play each other's songs and then make a record of it and then put on a show. And that's all happening at the Rickshaw this weekend. That's October 17th. And you can find out more information about it on Facebook. If you just put in Quadruple Dare into Google, it'll bring you up some websites to find that out. But in the meantime, here's Quadruple Dare on CITR. This is a song called Angel Lust.
I know, I know, the same, the same.
have it. That was Quadruple Dare on CITR 101.9 FM. All right. Well, I don't know if you checked out the Globe and Mail this morning, but they have another article on the BC Arts funding cuts, and they happened to actually talk to Minister Kruger. Now, Kevin Kruger is the Minister of Tourism, Culture, and the Arts for BC. He was notedly on the radio earlier in June saying that arts groups were happy with the funding they were receiving, and they were understanding of any cuts that could be made. And that was long before the 75 to 92% of funding cuts went through in early September. Now, in this new article published in the Globe and Mail by Marsha Lederman, Kevin Kruger is quoted to have said, quote, I would like to see an appropriation for arts in the coming year's budget, but we don't know how quickly the economy will turn around or what will be possible. Mr. Kruger says that with a deficit totaling nearly $3 billion, his government simply has to prioritize, and arts and culture are not at the top of the list. That is a direct quote from the Globe and Mail article. Now, as a result of this, some Vancouver artists, including Battery Opera's very own resident artist, David McIntosh, he has put these funding cuts into perspective in his own show. Now, for those people who listen to the Arts Report every week, you'll remember that I visited David McIntosh and spoke with him about his live-action show, Lives Were Around Me, which walks through the downtown east side and into the police museum. It tells a story of Vancouver long before the city looked anything like it does today, long before the Olympics were even a glint in many men's tears. And so as a result of the funding cuts, and to give people an impression of what the cuts look like to an artist, David has raised his ticket prices from the $26 charge that he charged last year for a sold-out run of Lives Were Around Me. They're now $267.67 each, plus an $8 service charge. Yes, I am not joking. If you go to Battery Opera's website, you will be able to purchase tickets for $267.67 each, plus a service charge of $8. And McIntosh says that this reflects the actual cost without subsidies of mounting his production. He says the price is meant to hammer home a message about the recent cuts to arts funding in British Columbia. Without government funding, artists will continue to make art in BC, but the public won't be able to see it. So, now, I think that this is a really excellent representation, and I really hope that David gets more coverage on this front, because God knows that at $267 a pop, I don't know how many people are going to be able to make it out to his show. And it's a worthwhile show to see. It was really, really excellent. Completely sold out last year. So as for Battery Opera, no tickets have been sold yet, which is not such a big surprise. But David McIntosh doesn't seem too surprised. And he says in this Globe and Mail article that if people just show up at the venue on the dates of the performances and there is space available, he'll allow patrons to pay what they can for the show. So don't stop. Do go and see Lives Were Around Me. It's playing out of the Alibi Room, I believe. No, it's down in Gastown. I'll have it after the break. But yes, funding cuts are a reality, and Kevin Kruger will be at the Kulch tomorrow at noon, cutting the ribbon of the new Kulch building. Yes, they're opening it officially for the city to enjoy and for artists to use. If you have the time on your lunch hour tomorrow to get down to the Kulch, I think Minister Kruger would be well advised to perhaps put on his waterproof gear and avoid any flying objects, because I don't know how warm the reception will be to his presence. However, that being said, tomorrow the Kulch at noon, the ribbon cutting ceremony is happening. We're very glad that the Kulch's new space is up and running and that art is happening there despite all the funding cuts. And so that's it. That's all I'm going to leave you with today here on the Arts Report. I've got one more track from the Kidnap Kids, who again won the fifth Shindig competition last night at the Railway Club. So this is another track by the Kidnap Kids. It's called God on CITR 101.9 FM. send me some emails at arts@citr.ca, and I'll see you here next week.